Hi, friends. Welcome to Karina Faith Diaries 2025. Today, my conversation was with Hallie Simpson, my former business coach, and it's just full of pearls of wisdom. She's giving us so many tips to prioritize ourselves in order to succeed in everything that we do in life. So you do not want to miss this. She's also giving her testimony here, obviously, in how she found Jesus in her life and what that brought to the table also. So I hope that you enjoy this podcast. And here's a little bit about Hallie. Hallie's a coach who knows the highs of success and the pitfalls of overdoing it. She wrote her first bucket list at age 8 and started devouring personal development books as a teenager and successfully sewed knives in college. Yes, really. With a biology degree from Indiana University, Hallie climbed to the top 2% of an international beauty brand, earning 5 pink Cadillacs along the way. She recruited, trained, and coached hundreds of sales professionals, building a reputation as a trusted leader. But the hustle caught up with her, leading to a 2-year recovery from adrenal fatigue, a wake-up call that transformed her approach to success. Today, as a globally recognized professional certified coach, Hallie helps business owners and leaders ditch the overwhelm and focus on what truly matters. Her mission? To help clients prevent burnouts, cultivate a focused mindset, and achieve sustainable growth. And if you do want to support this podcast, it means the world to me if you're liking this video on YouTube or if you're giving us a 5-star rating or leaving us a comment on the podcast platform that you choose to listen this from. Anything and engagement helps, and sending these episodes to people in your life that you think can benefit from it just means so much to us. It really helps us to share the word about this incredible guests that we have coming over here. So I thank you guys so much. I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Hi, friends. You've made it to Karina Faith Diaries, your new go-to spot for real talk about the journeys that shape our faith. I'm Karina, your host, and I'm super excited to chat about real-life struggles, wins, and everything in between. This is all about honest conversations, lifting each other up, and the power of a relationship with Jesus. Whether you're here to learn, connect, or to get inspired, let's get started together. Okay, Hallie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Me too. I'm super, super happy. We were talking a little bit off camera on how this is such a full circle moment for both of us, I guess, because Hallie was my business coach for about 6 months in 2023, and she's a huge part of why or how this podcast came to life. This was a dream I had. And when we started talking, she made me write down like all of my dreams and aspirations and things that I wanted to do with my life. And I was like, oh, I want to do this Christian podcast. And she's like, okay, what would it take? I'm like, well, wait a minute. I'm not ready to do it. It's like a dream, you know, like those dreams that you have and never happen. Or maybe like when you're 60, I don't know. And she's like, oh no, we're going to make this happen. And I'm just so grateful to you. So it's very exciting that you're sitting on the chair now.
I know. I'm thrilled to be here with the tables turned.
Yes.
And I remember that moment as well. I think there was something in your voice where I was like, oh, this is big.
Yeah.
This is something that like feels not reachable for her, but she cares deeply about it. So
yes.
I'm so glad we
explored
it.
And this is what I loved about our sessions too, which we're going to get into all of that. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but you are so good at picking up emotions.
Thank you.
We talked on the phone, so we met once in person when you came to Indy, and she's in Michigan. So all of our sessions were over the phone, not even on FaceTime. It was just a voice call. And you were so good at picking up the things that I cared the most about and the things that I needed to change. I was in a time that I was very unbalanced in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to prioritize family and my work was taking all of my time and I had nothing left. And you helped me to get that back on track and make more happen. So just by prioritizing and everything. So Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about you as a child before we get into all of the business side of things.
I grew up, our family moved to Zionsville when I was four, which is on the northwest side of I was two on the northwest side of Indianapolis. And, you know, we probably had a very typical like suburban upbringing. And I have a brother who's 4 years younger than me. And then my mom was a teacher. My dad was a salesman. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was in sports and we went to church on Sundays and it was something that we did. And that's where friends hung out. But I did not have like a personal relationship with Jesus at that point. Mm-hmm. Something that I am noticing as, you know, I get older is in the 80s and 90s, you didn't really talk about mental health.
Oh.
And my mom has always battled depression. And that was something that was very much a factor within the walls of our home that not a lot of my friends and people understood. Mm. And so as I have gotten older and, you know, you deal with your own stuff, yeah. I see things that go back to my upbringing that had an impact on. And so that's, you know...
Did she know it was depression?
Yes.
She did. Yep. Okay.
I've never known a time that my mom has not been on antidepressants.
Oh, wow. I'm so sorry about that.
Yeah. And so that was just a part of my upbringing that, mm-hmm. you know, there was very beautiful things and rich experiences and friend groups and stuff. And then there's that as well that, you know, the person who is battling the mental health, that's their journey. But then the people that they live with have their own journey with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I had a very close family member that battled that. And mm-hmm. it was just such a struggle to watch because there's nothing we can do.
I know.
There's nothing you can do. It's just something that they need to walk on. And it's... I'm so sorry. But how was that? Did you have siblings growing up?
I did. So a younger brother.
Okay.
And, you know, he and I are great friends today. We mm-hmm. have conversations where we process a lot of, you know, what went on in our household together. Yeah. And I honestly think that that's a major reason why I do what I do, because I started advocating for my mom at such a young age and I wanted her to feel empowered and like she had choice and that there were opportunities, and she just wasn't wired to kind of go after those things. And so it just feels really good to be able to support people as a profession who can do that.
You just never know the experiences that will shape you, right? That you were able to walk on and then you can do something later on. Is she still with us?
She is.
Okay. Yep. Is she doing well?
You know, they're in a good place. They're stable right now.
Good.
Yeah. Good. During the pandemic, my brother and I moved them into assisted living. So that was its
that's so
whole
nice.
Thing. But they're in a good place right now.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear. So you said they were Christians, but not really, you know, kind of like lukewarm, would you say? Yeah. Okay. Just kind of like checking the boxes and everything. Okay.
Yeah.
So then how did you evolve, like fast forward to like maybe your younger years? How did you find your faith? What was that experience?
You know, I'm always grateful that I was part of a youth group. And I was part of it more so because that's where my friends were. And it was the social piece. And, mm-hmm.
so
you know,
important.
Yeah. And they went and did trips. And, mm-hmm. and you know, so I did all of the caravans and the things and built houses with Habitat and loved that. But when I got to college, I just kind of threw all of it out the window. Mm-hmm. And was, okay, I'm going to go.
As a lot of people do, right?
You know.
Go a little cray-cray.
They sure did.
It's the devil years. That's what we say, right? It's like the time when the devil's like, let me try them.
Yeah, and there's so much opportunity to be distracted,
yes.
you know? Was fumbling and just, I knew that there was a hole in my heart and all the different ways that I was trying to fill it
mm-hmm.
were empty.
Yeah.
You know?
With drinking, partying, and things like that, just like all the things.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Being in a sorority and doing the typical Greek life at college. And, you know, I had a really good group of friends who were all, many of them, their faith was, they were raised around faith as mm-hmm. well. So there was at least like that similar vein.
Yeah.
But nobody, a few of them were practicing, but mm-hmm. but not really.
It's hard. I feel this, and I can say this with Bella, my oldest.
Yeah.
She's the sorority life right now, too, and she has wholesome, great, faithful friends, but they're all doing the college life too. Yeah. It's very hard to stand your ground, aside from a few ones that she's always like, Mom, I look up to this girl so much. She still is able to wake up and go to church and do the things, which she does too. But like you said, the seed was planted, mm-hmm. right? Like you had experienced the church life and the social aspect of this. And so I think that's a really important thing that a lot of people don't yeah. have. Yeah. So how did you reconnect? Like you went through.
So I moved out to Denver after graduating college mm-hmm. and job hopped, and in within 3 years had three different jobs. So I was very, I just didn't know what, you know, how do people know what they want to do when they grow up?
What was your degree?
Biology.
Oh, that's interesting. Wow, that's my mom's profession. Really? So you went to Denver for a job opportunity or just kind of try something new?
Just something new. A friend of mine, I wanted to go to Seattle because the real world was out in Seattle at point from MTV. And,
I love it.
And then one of my friends goes, well, I'm going to Denver. Do you want to come? And I said, yeah, let's go.
I love that. I love the freedom too, that we don't have anything to think. Like, let's experience.
I, at that point, when I was out in Colorado, is when I got into Mary Kay. And it wasn't something I was seeking out, but it found me. Uh-huh. And I went to our very first conference, the first conference in Dallas, Texas. And Mary Kay is a Christian organization.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And their values are faith first, family second, career third.
Wow.
And I was in an arena with 10,000 women hearing a business meeting where they were quoting scripture and they were opening with prayer.
Wow.
And I'm going to cry now. Mm-hmm. I started crying in that arena and I did not stop for 4 days. Wow. I mean, the ugly cry. It was, really? I mean, standing in the middle of a hotel lobby and just sobbing and not knowing why.
Wow.
And, you know, being raised in a household where my mom very much wasn't equipped to navigate life, mm-hmm. it was overwhelming to be in a space where all these women were victors over mm-hmm. their life rather than victims.
Yes.
And I just knew that they had something that I wanted. And so I came home from that conference and I grew up Presbyterian, and so I opened the Yellow Pages, which still we had at that time, and looked for the closest Presbyterian church to where I lived and went the next day. And and I think I cried on Sundays for like the next 5 years at church.
Wow.
So it was just, you know, God needed me to be in Mary Kay to mm-hmm. reconnect with him.
Yes.
And I was so grateful to have been surrounded by women who were not just business mentors, but like big sisters and spiritual leaders mm-hmm. and just healed me in ways that I needed to be healed.
Jesus.
I know.
That's amazing. He puts us in places sometimes. That's like, who would have thought? I didn't know that about Mary Kay.
Yeah.
Wow. So then did you feel like a shift in your life after that or?
I so much did. You know, I got into BSF for a few years and did Bible study fellowship.
Okay.
So big, deep dives into like one book of the Bible for a whole year. It was really cool to be in a space where I could have business problems and business conversations mm-hmm. and the answer would be scripture.
Wow. Because it is. We can find answers to everything in life in scripture if we just take the time or are curious enough to look, right?
It's true.
And if you have mentors who are able to guide you in that path, I mean, what a gift.
Yeah. So, it just was a great place for me to get closer to God, understand who Jesus was. Mm-hmm. And that spurred just growth inside of me that I don't know how I would have gotten any other way.
Yeah.
You know?
That's amazing. So then this time you're nurturing, you're learning about God, you're learning about Jesus, all of the things, found a church family.
Mm-hmm.
And then where were you in life? Like you said, you were job hopping. Yep. So walk us through that
I think I was 24 when I decided to move back to Indianapolis.
And what made that? What led?
I realized that I wasn't anybody's top priority on a day-to-day basis out in Denver. And what's funny is I now have so many Mary Kay friends out there. I have cousins that live out there. I have friends from growing up from Indianapolis that are out there. But at that time,
you needed a community.
I did.
Yes.
So I moved back home to Indianapolis. I decided to make Mary Kay a career. Mm-hmm. I realized the corporate opportunities that I'd tried just didn't, they didn't feel like they were a fit for me. So came back home. I laid on my parents' couch for probably 2 months, procrastinating.
Trying to decide, what do I want to do with my life?
I knew when there were reruns on TLC, like that daytime TV, it was so bad. And then I just got sick of myself.
Yes, that's good, too. It's like, hey, wake up. Yeah. Let's go.
And I thought, well, these women are making Mary Kay a career, so if they can do it, I can do it.
Yeah.
And so I pursued Mary Kay as a career for 15 years and had the pink Cadillacs, won the diamond rings, was on stage doing like the Miss America wave. Yeah.
So you're not no longer with them?
No. Are you? I do it just for myself so I can still get a discount. But
wow. Yeah,
it turned into a career. And I was a single woman. Mm-hmm. And the idea was to build this so that when I met the person and had the family, I could be there and raise children. Keep on doing
it. Yes, be there for your family.
And then that piece never happened.
Oh, so yeah, tell us about it. So you just never like...
Yeah, you know, I dated some direct sales organizations and the ones that I've been a part of. There is, you know, a hustle that happens.
Absolutely.
And entrepreneurs, there's a hustle.
Yes.
You're creating something out of nothing.
Yes.
And I went and did a deep dive into that and bought into it hook, line, and sinker. And to the point where I gave myself mono at one point.
Wow.
And I had like a 2-year recovery of it from adrenal fatigue. I mean, it was.
Wow. You were really going for it.
I did.
Like you, wow. Mm-hmm. And so do you feel like it was nothing left for your like personal life? Is that what, like you were drained or just too focused?
I was so focused. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my friends at that time were, they were meeting their person and starting families. And so they were sort of like pulling back and creating their own life with somebody. Mm-hmm. And so the social interactions that I had been accustomed to were just much more limited.
Yeah.
So
when you went on dates, you never met someone who you thought, oh, I could see this going somewhere. Maybe I should pull back. No.
No.
Okay.
I had a lot of first and second dates, not a lot of third dates.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. And you were such a businesswoman, like driven too, that I feel like it's like you probably wanted that in a man. Is that fair to say? Or were you didn't really have a... Because usually like you want to admire your partner, right? When you're so like successful or driven, and it's hard to find that, especially when you're young. Yeah. You know, everybody's kind of starting and...
Yeah, I definitely was. I'd been surrounded by people who thought that way and were wired that way. And that's what I understood. You know, I've learned more things about myself and how I show up in relationship that I just didn't know at the time.
Yeah.
You know, and so for whatever reason, it just seems so easy for other people. And that's been the biggest beef that I've had with God.
Really?
Oh, it's my like goodness.
Yes.
You know, I mean, honestly, like you just have those times where you just have to cuss him out about something.
Yes. And or just he welcomes the questions. It's like, hey, I'm like, what is up in this?
Yeah.
Did you feel like you got any closure or good answers or peace about this?
I don't know if I always have found the peace about it, but I've landed on acceptance.
Okay.
You know?
Yes.
I've got somebody in my life now. And so.
That's awesome. I was going to say, you're young, you're beautiful. You're still like, you know, we're talking like, oh, that was it for me.
Yeah.
No, like there's not. I mean, sometimes he reserves the best for last and it's like the best is yet to come. I do believe in that.
And everybody has like that thing that is their challenge in life. And this is mine or has been mine.
Yes.
And I also, part of my own learning has been how long am I choosing to cling on to this is my challenge. You know, like I'm holding on to it for a reason.
Yes.
And I have to be willing to let it go.
Yes.
And the identity that I hold about myself that is part of this. And so
100%.
Yeah.
And it's, I love that you didn't let go of your relationship with him because you didn't get something that you wanted to, which I think sometimes we do because we're like, you know, I don't know, for many reasons. And I think it says a lot about who you are that you're still like, hey, I'm not happy with you right now, but I still love you. And I know that you love me. You know, yeah. I think that's the most things. Like, he loves us so much. And what he wants for us is so much better than what we want. Mm-hmm. And I do struggle with things like this too, which is, you know, I have all of my goals. Here's my list, God. Let's make it happen. Yeah. And he's just like laughing. Okay. Sure. I think it's the most important thing is that we keep on pursuing, like you keep on trying, you know, going on dates or finding, you know, someone and not just be like, okay, this is it for me.
Mm-hmm. And I had to get to a place, you know, I mean, that's one thing that I have like really held on to when I've been in trials is just knowing that he has this and that I am safe as long as I am with him.
Amen.
And I may never know on this side of the earth, you know, this side of life, like the answers and why, but I know that he is good and he uses all of this. And that feels like a light at whatever tunnel I'm going through. And if I use that to anchor me, I'll find my way through it. But then we're also stubborn. And so I've had to be willing to do things differently. And that gets scary.
Can you give us some examples of
being a woman who's very independent, that sometimes men don't know how to handle that.
Yes.
Learning which pieces of that where it's best for me to be that way and where it's not, or where it's not needed.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes my independence is it's a protection mechanism.
I was going to say a defense. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's how you're like your walls.
Yeah. And so to just give myself permission to feel safe and to recognize that I'm safe and I don't need that right now.
Yeah.
You know, so.
That's great. That is so great. So then we've talked about before when in our sessions you mentioned your foster kids. Uh-huh. How did that whole thing happen? Usually it's like a married couple who already have kids or maybe not have kids and are looking to adopt. So I'm curious to hear how did that come into play in your life?
So I broke up with a boyfriend. I was turning 1 year before 40. That's how I saw it.
Okay.
It wasn't 39. It was 1 year before 40.
You're like the scary 40s.
But what was in my mind is the life I thought I would be living at 40. I wasn't on track for.
Yeah.
And I was mourning the loss of the relationship, but I was mourning this idea of this dream that I had and that it wasn't coming to fruition. So after that, I started exploring just different ways that single women create families and read some books. I've had friends that have gone to sperm banks and gotten pregnant and have three boys, and other people have done domestic adoptions and international adoptions, and just started exploring it and reading some books and landed on the idea of adopting through the foster system. So I'd started that process in Indianapolis before COVID, and then that kind of blew up everything. So when I moved to Northern Michigan, once I got settled, I thought, well, okay, let's do it. Let's start it. Got connected with an agency up there and did the whole thing and was kind of, you know, a licensed foster parent. I learned of these two girls who were on a pre-adoptive path. And I felt like I was standing at the edge of a cliff of like, okay, here it is. You know, we're gonna jump. Yeah. So last year had two sisters live with me for 6 months.
How old were they?
When they moved in, they were 4 and 11.
They have had a lot of that they've been through then at that point.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Very tough.
And you know, I was a newbie.
Sure. Had no idea what just came in with your heart. Let's do this. I'll be your mommy. That's the idea I had. She was like, yay.
As I learned, as they were with me, I learned the complexities of their case, mm-hmm. you know, and it was, I felt like the learning curve was so steep. Mm-hmm. Just not having been a parent myself, I didn't have a lot of the typical tools in my tool belt.
Yes, yes.
And then getting to see, you know, trauma and
oh, gosh.
How that impacts kids and just the, you know, these kids are born into this situation that they didn't ask for. Mm-hmm. And then for the rest of their lives, they're going to be trying to overcome and may not want to overcome.
Yeah.
But just not know any different, you know.
So when you said they were like the pre-adoptive, what does that mean? Like the parents could not take over? Because I know that the goal of fostering is to keep the kids safe until the parents are able to take over, right? Yeah. So what does that mean that when it's pre-adoptive?
So once the biological family has been given opportunity after opportunity after opportunity mm-hmm. that they have not been able to meet the expectations sure. of, then eventually the case might be considered of terminating their rights.
Okay.
So the girls were in a situation where that was on track and there was a trial date set for terminating the parents' rights.
Wow.
Prior to that happening, I was starting to realize as a single woman what a 4-year-old and 11-year-old who had been through what they'd been through really needed. And I was starting to get very honest with myself that I can't sustain this long term. I went to the agency and I said, you know, there are people who their purpose in life is to create a loving space mm-hmm. for kids who have been born into crazy situations and need, you know, a respite, need an opportunity for another path. And I said, I am realizing that that's not my purpose. I have other things that I want to do in life. And maybe it was naive of me to think that I could just take them along in the path that I wanted. But if I'm going to have a home that's going to be what they need, I'm going to have to give up my purpose and really
just, focus on this.
Yeah.
Because it takes over your life.
It does. And I said, if I have to do that, I'm not going to be right.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be a good situation for anybody if I'm not making the choice that allows me to be my best self. Mm-hmm. And I was really proud of myself because I don't think I would have had, you know, 10, 15 years ago, the vocabulary and the emotional understanding to communicate that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also know that, you know, that was going to be the best situation for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Were you already a business coach at that point? Okay, yeah. I was going to say, because the wording, I mean, the knowledge of it, I think it all came with that.
It did.
It's just like understanding how you work and how your brain is wired and wow.
Yeah. And I was just seeing, like, I'd been to a few conferences and workshops with other foster parents, and the perspective that they were bringing, I was noticing, like, I don't have that.
Oh.
Or gosh, it would be helpful if I did. Mm-hmm. Through the course of the girls being with me, their case actually got changed back from a termination path to a reunification path.
Oh my goodness.
And that opened up some doors for them to be moved to another foster home. And now they're back with mom and dad.
Wow. Yeah. So do you keep in touch with them at all or very little?
Very little. Okay. They really developed some stronger bonds with two other foster families that they were with. Mm-hmm. And when I've seen them, it's been fun and it's, you know, it's nice to get the updates, but there hasn't been a lot of them reaching out to me. Uh-huh. And, you know, I just
kind of life goes on type of thing. Yes.
Yeah.
Have you ever read that book, A Child Called It?
No, I haven't, but I've heard of it.
Oh my gosh. So Brian read that in one, like he started like a night one time and then he read until like 4 in the morning. He could not put it down. It's 3 books essentially this kid to starts like his mom starts being abusive to him, just in a nutshell. And it's awful. Like this, he describes everything. It's just too, it's utter sadness. It's to the point that I've never experienced in my life. Like you just want to pick up this boy and hug him. It talks about how he, a teacher noticed he was being abused. He went to the foster system and how grateful he is to foster parents. Yeah. So if you are, I just wanted to say this because if you are thinking about fostering, it is not for everyone. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to know, try to understand as much as you can what, where you're going into. Because I try, we got licensed, Brian and I, to be. And that's why we read this book and after reading, I'm like, I'm going to be a foster parent.
Yeah.
Let's do this. Yeah. And I had three kids at that point, littles. I have no idea what I was thinking. And our middle one, Sophia's like, absolutely no. She's always been kind of against. The other two are kind of like me. We can do it all. Let's go. I have no idea where you're going. Sophia's more like Brian's. Like, let's think this through. It's, you know, let's make sure that we understand what we're getting into. And she's like, I don't think so. And then we, the more we understood the complexity of the situation, the more I understood that I'm like, I barely have time for my own kids.
Yeah.
Why would I want to put more kids in the situation? But he was like, what this kid was saying as a man later in life, like an adult, when he wrote this book, is like how important it was to have the foster parents. And he said he was a terrorist to the parents. Like he was stealing, he was running away. He gave this parents hell. Like, and he went to multiple homes due to all that he had been through. But he said, I love them and I just did not know how to love them. And, you know, that saying, hurt people hurt. It's the, you know, it's the case to something like that. It's like he was so hurt, he did not know how to love them, but kept on hurting them. Anyway, long story, just to say, don't let this stop you if you feel like that's your purpose.
Yeah.
Right.
And I definitely, you know, I've had another single woman who is a family friend of ours reach out and she's going through the process of fostering. And I told her, I said, my goal is not to discourage you. If this is something you want to do, I absolutely encourage you to do it because your situation is going to be different than mine.
Yes.
But I want to share some of what I experienced so that you have eyes wide open.
Yes.
You know?
Know where you're getting into. Yeah. I completely agree with you. Just it's important to know and not go with the naive. And there's a lot of success stories of, you know, complete adoption and So I think it's definitely something worth it. That to say that once the kids grow, Brian is really, he just loves being a dad. Yeah. He loves little kids too. And this is not out of the books for us. I feel like once the kids are out doing their adult life, I mean, we're open to maybe fostering, you know, eventually. We thought about it, you know, over the years. But anyway, we'll see.
Yeah.
He's going to have to do the most of it. So I don't know, honey. Well,
and the other, you know, like reflecting back on it, I am so grateful. I'm proud of myself that I did it. I know that I gave the girls a safe, warm, you know, place where they had experiences that they never would have had otherwise. And I also feel like all the other homes that they were in, it was not a single woman doing it and figuring it out. And so there may be pieces that they experienced or that they won't recognize until 10, 15 years from now.
Yes.
And I learned things about myself I never would have learned any other way. And it was such a period of growth for me as well. So I'm glad I did it. And I would encourage people, if it's on your heart, do it.
I mean, what cool thing for them to see an adult woman, you know, who's running her own business, doing it all, you know, and that teaches them that they can do it also. Yeah. Like they can be independent and not rely on a man, on a partner.
Yeah.
Right. That's amazing. I love that story.
Thank you.
What do you feel like your testimony is in all of those experiences that you have had in your life?
So there's a difference between self-confidence and self-esteem. And self-confidence is like your ability to perform or to, you know, achieve. And self-esteem is your self-love.
Oh.
And I had self-confidence growing up. I didn't have self-love.
Oh.
And I remember in my 30s, going through, I don't know what the image was or if it was a Bible study thing or something, but I remember getting this perspective shift of like, I wonder if I, what would happen if I started to try to see myself through God's eyes? You know, I am his child and he sees all sorts of things about me and in me that I can't even comprehend in my human brain and my human limited capacity. But gosh, if I started to try, I wonder what I would see.
Oh, I'm going to cry.
And so my affirmation that year, and somebody challenged me with this, there is a difference between saying an affirmation and just reciting it versus going and standing in front of a mirror and looking at your own self in your own eyeballs and receiving what you are saying to yourself. And I started doing that. I stood in front of my, you know, floor length mirror, and my affirmation was, I see myself as God sees me, loved, precious, gifted, talented, and worthy of living a full and blessed life. And it wasn't just the repetition of saying it, it was the repetition of receiving it and owning it. And like, I went through a period of falling in love with myself. And I think that that is a huge gift that not everybody owns. And sometimes high achievers and self-starters and business owners and entrepreneurs, they are wired that way because they are out to prove something. And they are trying to get the accolade or have the achievement or make the income or whatever to validate who they are. And when we can stop the achieving and we can acknowledge the beauty of who we are, I think that it's a, like a shift in energy. It's a shift in intensity. And I think people just like rest into themselves. And it's a different way of working and living. And I think that God wants us all to be able to embrace that.
Yeah. That is an amazing discovery. It's what people say, you know, like it, the difference between I love God and God loves me, right? And you are receiving that love. And I just love that. I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah.
You guys should. It's because we need the pep talk, you know. I need it daily, to be honest with you. I'm a pretty joyful person. I wake up like I'm a morning person when we're talking about it here. I wake up, I'm like, yeah, I'm ready to conquer the world. By 4 p.m. I'm like, I hate myself, I just want to go to bed, I like hate the world, it's raining. So maybe those are the moments that I need to get just, you know, honest with myself and remind myself that God loves me.
Yeah.
And that I'm made precious. We are the daughters of the King.
We are.
And he knows how many, I mean, when you were saying like how much God knows me, it reminds me of that scripture that he knows how many hairs are in our head. That is just so crazy to me. It's like, that's how deep he created us from. Wow. So that's incredible that you came into that realization. Were you an adult at that point?
Yeah, I was in my mid-30s.
Okay, wow. Me too. When I finally realized how much God loved me, I was also in my mid-30s.
The woundings that we have, we just spend a lot of time putting obstacles up and rejecting things. And that was my intention this year, was just going, what other ways, what other obstacles am I putting up in my own path that if I took down, I wonder who I would be. Wow. I wonder what I would learn about myself. I wonder what would be possible.
So what are some of the signs of this, you know, pre-burnout or maybe like full-on burnouts that people should be aware of and maybe look for help?
The experiences that I have had, I can see it coming a mile away in other people. And I've actually been around people before and heard some of the things that they're saying and go, we're going to work together. And then sure enough, a year later, they're coming and reaching out to me to work together. And it's an overcapacity thing, which I mentioned before, but it's the kind of overcapacity where maybe the internal thoughts are, okay, I got to keep going. I can do this. You're trying to muster up the energy and the focus and the commitment on too regular of a basis. It's too much. When I talk with clients, it's almost like this treading water kind of feeling, and just like the water just keeps getting higher. Mm-hmm. They're not finding it where the water is getting lower. And it's usually an indication you're not taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
Sleep is being impacted. Your diet is being impacted. Your health is being impacted. And therefore, your mental clarity, your ability to focus, your ability to, you're not bringing the best of who you are to whatever you're doing. And so everything is being impacted. And a reset, you know, if you don't reset before you hit the brick wall is going to force a reset. Mm-hmm. And this may sound drastic, but take a very hard look at what is on your plate. And if you had to slash it in half, what would be the first to go? And start taking some of those steps, because if you don't choose it now and you continue on that path, you're going to be in a situation where it's starting to get chosen for you. Mm. And you just have to take it as it comes, because you're in burnout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did you recognize in yourself when you went through it?
I didn't. That was the hard part.
You hit the brick wall.
I hit the brick wall.
Wow.
I was so locked in on a Mary Kay goal. I was waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning, going full force. I was McDonald's drive through was my regular meal. I wasn't exercising. I don't think I ate vegetables regularly. And I was working until 10, 11, or 11, 12, 1 o'clock at night, and then waking up and doing it all again the next day. And I reached my goal. Mm-hmm. And I went to the doctor, and she said, "You look like you could fall asleep on this bed right now." And I said, "Yeah, I could."
Wow.
And so we did a blood test, and I had mono. And I was forced to sleep for 2 months.
And back off of everything.
I had to back off of everything. And then I had daily naps for 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So I didn't know the signs. And I think a lot of our world is so busy, and it's so noisy, and it's so much about the next thing and the to-do list driving that we don't press pause and go, something feels off.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a client I'm working with, working through this right now. And he's like, "This is so uncomfortable,"
mm-hmm.
but he's more peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
He's more efficient.
Yes.
And he's doing less. And it's this beautiful countercultural shift that we can all benefit from in different seasons.
Well, when I started working with you, I remembered that I had just decided to take a Sabbath. And we talked about this, you know, like how difficult it was. And it solidified to you. And I know one of my friends, Kathleen, after she went through with you, she's taking a Saturday off too.
Yeah.
We are told by the world that the more we do, like the busy, it's a status, you know, like, "Oh, you're so busy. Wow.
Yeah.
You must be so important." And the truth is, it's the devil's trap for us to just not do the things that are important, not take care of ourselves, just go for the next thing. It's not going to bring us joy. Like, I've been there too. So you can attest to it. You met your goal and you got yourself sick.
Yeah.
So that was the price you paid. And, you know, thank God you recovered. But some people can't, right? We're just going through all of this. And so it's so important to just take a step back and reevaluate. And I feel like you can offer that from a standpoint of, like, I've been through this.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Like, I have really experienced it. So as a coach, as a business coach that you are, and all the tools that you have, can you offer us some ideas of, like, people are feeling stuck in their lives? Just some tools that people can get on their own, or how they can get out of that stuck mold that they're in.
People come to work with me because they're in a place where whatever tools they're used to using in their own tool belt to move through trying situations, they're not working.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, I need something. Yes. You know, this is not fun.
Yes.
And so they come to me with a situation or a scenario that they're like, help me fix this. Mm-hmm. And I have found that my job is less about fixing that scenario for them, and it's more about reminding them of who they are, mm-hmm. and giving them some foundational things to, whether it's vocabulary, whether it's assessments, but to remind themselves of what their strengths are, what makes them great, what their superpowers are, mm-hmm. how they have really gotten to where they have gotten to in their life. And it's that principle of, you know, give a man a fish, feed him for a day, teach a man to fish, feed him for his life. Mm-hmm. And when I can help people identify things like their core values, the things that they hold that yeah. are important for them, it makes decision-making easier.
Oh, gosh. I remembered that lesson, too. Like, yeah. because I have such a hard time, or I used to. I still kind of do. But it's like, you gave me that. It's like, this is how you should make a decision. And, you know, just to help me kind of check this. Am I feeling this way? Okay, I know the answer.
Yeah.
Instead of just ruminating in my brain over and over and over. So you gave me so much, and I just, yeah, I love you for that. Well,
thank you. And I love it when I see those like moments go off, because, you know, I think energy is another one. Our world is so much about doing and achieving and the to-do list. And many of us are running around with this like badge of honor that we're busy. Mm. But what the heck are we busy doing? Exactly. You know, is it meaningful, or is it a false sense of accomplishment that we are attaching?
Yes.
And we often aren't in touch with our capacity of what we can really handle. And when we don't have margin, we don't have mental space to pull back and assess mm-hmm. what we need more of, what we need less of. And so I love helping people almost do an energy assessment of their life and get really bold with, what can you remove? Mm-hmm. What can you say no to? What is it time to close the chapter on? And then the third is our beliefs. We have all kinds of crazy things, mm-hmm. whether it's what the devil has, you know, implanted in our brain, but these are really our blind spots that we create for ourselves, that we need somebody outside of our head to help reflect back mm-hmm. these beliefs and stories we're telling ourselves that probably aren't true.
Yeah.
So those are kind of three things I love teaching people.
Well, I have examples of all of those that you've helped me with. And it was, I remember like the closing chapters, and I remember one time I was talking to you and I said, oh, I have to go and film this YouTube after we talk. And you kind of dove into this like, oh, like what is it? Is it something exciting? I'm like, oh, no, this is like handbag review that I just have to do it. And you're like, so why do you have to do it? I'm like, well, I just have to keep this going. You're like, why? And it was just a series of questions that made me realize in that phone call, I decided that I no longer wanted to keep my other YouTube channel going, because yeah. it took me so long and I was holding on to it because there was so much emotion mm-hmm. in so much of my time and in, you know, my everything that I had, just knowing that it was not bringing me joy at the end of the day. And then we analyzed the net, you know, what was earning versus how much time I was putting into it. And it was just, it was a business decision of like, you know, and it wasn't like something that, oh, I have to close this and never look back. It's like for the moment, mm-hmm. it just did not serve my purpose of where I wanted to go. And I was just holding on to it because it was a task that I gave myself. And I thought that that's what I had to do in order to, quote unquote, succeed.
Yeah.
And so it was such a weight that took out of my shoulders. And we talked about this on our following. I'm like, wow, I feel so free. All of a sudden, I have all this creativity that I wanted to do other things with. So I didn't realize how much time and energy that little task, little quote unquote mm-hmm. again, was taking and consuming for me. And it wasn't allowing me to be creative and do other things that did bring me joy. And then the other example was on the belief system. I remember when, you know, I was getting ready to do the podcast and I'm like really like searching for things. And I told you, I don't feel equipped for this. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I'm not an interviewer. I'm not a Bible expert. You know, I love talking about faith. I love hearing people's testimonies, and that is so inspiring to me. And I walked through a time in my life where this was holding me together, listening to mm-hmm. other people's overcoming, you know, trials and yeah. difficult times. And so that was my way of giving back. But I'm like, I am nothing like all those people that I watch. And you said to me, do you remember what you said to me?
I don't. I'm curious to hear.
You said, Karina, God doesn't call the equipped. Oh. He equips the called. Mm-hmm. And then we stayed in silence. And that just kind of sank in my heart. And that's when I knew, too, that you were... I've known that you were a woman of God just from some bits of our conversations. But that mm-hmm. really solidified. Yeah. I'm like, I love that we are working together and we have the same belief system, because it's important to me. Working with someone like this is really helpful. Yeah. I wouldn't want it any other way. That little thing that you told me is so big, Hallie, that it really mm. carried me through a lot of moments that I don't feel equipped to be here still yeah. to this day. I probably have said this in other episodes. And it's just like, yeah, it's something that was so helpful that you have no idea. And I love that you're planting the seeds in people's lives. Mm-hmm. And how important it is. Aww. I love. So tell us, how can people work with you? What does it look like? Can you tell us a little
bit? I can. About so that? There's actually two different ways now that oh. So I am one-on-one work is what I truly love. I remember being part of a group coaching where I was a client in the group, and I learned some valuable things, but I knew I was never going to be as vulnerable as I needed to be with an audience of peers mm-hmm. to get real change. Mm. And what I was craving at that point was somebody to crawl inside of my head and help me find my own way forward. Mm-hmm. So the one-on-one work I love doing. And I do, you know, reach out to me. I love setting aside time to hear first like an overarching snapshot of what's going on, and then also give people a chance to experience coaching. Mm-hmm. And let's see if there's some synergy, because there's times where what the client needs, I am not the person.
So you can kind of guide them that yeah. way, like this will be a better path for you.
Yeah. And then the second is some of the exercises that we talked about, the core mm-hmm. values ones, the energy assessment, the beliefs. I know that there really are people that just need some tools like that mm-hmm. to kind of get them through like over a little speed bump that they're experiencing. And so I've created a mini course it's can be done in an afternoon. I was like going, well, when people are ready to like tap out of, you know, whatever they're doing, what do? They go play golf, mm-hmm. they go get a mani-pedi, they take themselves out to lunch, they, you know, press pause on whatever for the day. And so I wonder if I could put something together that could be much more transformative than mm-hmm. just an escape yeah. that somebody could do in an afternoon and learn some things about themselves that could really help them move forward. So I've put it all in a mini course. And wow. it's under $100. And so
that's great.
Yeah. And so I have that as well that people can purchase and, you know, walk themselves through a transformative coffee date with themselves.
I love it. So they go through the course, and then do you give them feedback on their answers, or is this just some all in there kind of self-guided?
So it's all in there. It's self-guided. There's some worksheets. And then if people want a coaching option to accompany it, then mm-hmm. that
they can have it as well.
Yeah, okay. They can do that as well. So I know that some people's journey, it really is going to be 6 months of working together. There's lots of moving factors and just a really customized, curated journey that somebody's going to go on, because every single business out there and leader is mm-hmm. has a very unique set of circumstances that they're wanting to walk through. And then there's other people who go, you know, I just need like a little nugget. I don't know that I need 6 months of coaching, but I want some greater self-awareness. I need yeah. something to anchor
some
me.
Tools. Yeah.
And so I have both available.
That's great. When did you decide to have that other option?
Just in the last month, I put it together.
I can see a lot of change there in your socials too. You're like, I'm going to show a little more day to day.
It's so I moved to a very small town. I'm like going, well, what do I have at my fingertips to, you know, meet with people? I have clients in Arizona and Texas and Virginia. I work mm-hmm. with people all over the country anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I know some of your success stories. So if you guys want to hear more about what Hallie does, what is your website?
HallieSimpson.com.
Okay. And there's some testimonials there, right?
There are.
Yes.
Yep.
I heard about you from our mutual friend, Beth Chappell. And I remember her telling us about her sessions and we're like, oh my gosh, we need this too. And then she had a friend who was a very small business owner and mm-hmm. he was able to multiply his
yes.
employees and everything just all by, and he said it was all by working with Hallie.
Yeah.
So it's small business, but big business also. So you're able to.
Yeah. My clients tend to be, you know, like the hometown kind of main street business. So mm-hmm. I've worked with general contractors. I have a couple pest control companies that I worked
wow.
with. I've done attorneys and custom pool companies.
Wow.
So it's not industry specific. What mm-hmm. I work with is the human side of business. And
which
I think
is the most important, I think,
yeah.
is how we think about ourselves is how we're going to move in with whatever we do.
It's true. Right. And when we have good habits and good practices, we bring those into our business. When we have bad habits and bad practices, we bring those into our business.
Yeah. So true. If you guys want to maybe work with Hallie or explore some options of what she can do for you, you can always go to her website at HallieSimpson.com.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere else?
And check out my Instagram now. I'm learning that.
So. Yeah. So you're doing like daily updates and trying
to... I am. I hired a mentor.
Oh.
So I don't know.
Fun.
We'll see.
That's amazing.
I know.
I love you. I love this. It's okay. Okay, great. Are there any like top books that you would recommend for people like wanting to start getting to know themselves or business related?
So I know you have gotten on this bandwagon, but John Maxwell was one of the first.
My God. Yay! Heather, she's just like, no, rolling her eyes. He is so amazing.
Yeah, I think the first book I ever read of his was The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. And
it's great.
Yeah. It, you know, and it's so the way he speaks, it's so digestible and easy mm-hmm. to understand. Mm-hmm. So that you can't go wrong with anything in his library. Very rarely do I reread books.
Okay.
But there are two books that I have reread numerous times. And one is by Tommy Newberry and it's called The 4-8 Principle. And it's based on Philippians 4:8.
Oh.
And I always misquote this verse, but it's, you know, basically teaching you to think about the things that God thinks about.
Mm.
Whatsoever is true, whatsoever is noble, whatsoever is lovely,
that.
If anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I got that wrong, but you get the gist.
No, but yes, yeah. I love that too. It's such a great reminder.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he's a coach and he does each chapter of the book. You know, we talk about highs in our life and valleys in our life. And mm-hmm. he poses the question, who's to say that the mountaintop is just supposed to be a small little blip? What if that's God showing you how it can always be?
Yeah.
And just expanding your thinking. So I love that book. And then Jen Sincero is... she does all the badass books.
Oh, I have that. Gosh, that book changed my life to the yellow one, How to Be a Badass.
Yes.
I gave that to my girl. I'm like, you have to read this book.
I know.
No, it's so cool because she's also a very like casual.
Yes.
You know, it's easy to read and it's fun. And she poses that. So, what's your thoughts on just...
There's so much humor laced in what she's saying, but it's also... she does a great job. You're a badass at making money. She does a very great job in that of outlining how our brains work.
Mm.
And she doesn't do neuroscience speak, but she delivers the principles of how your emotions play a role and things that you need to really transform your thinking and rewire your brain. And it So I love it. I've probably listened to it 10 times.
That's cool. Yeah. I need to get it. It's in my garage, actually, because I cleaned out my books. I'm like, I need to get rid of some of these books. And I might pick back up again and read it. But I'm curious about the other one. So let's wrap up this conversation with, how would you recommend us setting some goals for 2025?
This exercise I started doing, and I did with a client first, is instead of going right to goal setting, like we know the SMART goal setting, we know, you know, it, not New Year's resolutions, or we do an intention instead. I want to encourage you first to look back at the last 5 years and just go, you know, 2024, 2023, and label the last 5 years, and maybe on each one different sheet of paper. And then start bulleting maybe 3 to 5 or 3 to 7 things that you accomplished in the year that you're proud of. It could have been an accolade. It may have been something within your marriage or a trip that your family took, a memory that you made. Mm-hmm. But look and reflect back. When I have done this exercise, I am astonished by some of the, how little time it takes to make meaningful things happen. Mm-hmm. And we often see that in other people. We don't really look at our life and see what we have done. Mm-hmm. So to create that space first and look at what you, in your own capacity, with the life that you live, the responsibilities that you have, the family and everything, what's been meaningful that you've created in the last 5 years? From there, then start thinking about what the coming year can bring. And it doesn't have to be all about doing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be all about adding. It can be who you're going to become. Mm. It can be about, this last year for me was, what are the obstacles I need to remove? Mm. What are the things on autopilot, the patterns that I have that I just don't even think about that I'm doing that inhibit my best self?
Wow.
And so I removed some of those. And it was an astonishing first 4 months of self-discovery and learning things about myself, tendencies and patterns, and doing a deep dive into my own emotional journey and my own experience of emotions that was really like my big win from the year, which may not be meaningful for other people, but gosh, it's meaningful for me.
No, I think that what taking away things, I absolutely think it's so meaningful that are, inhibiting you from being your best self, is like, that's what a great place to start. Because there's a lot of habits that I do that are probably, you know, so that would take some deep dive and like a little sit down moment and come to Jesus.
Yeah. But I encourage people to go on that journey. And mine was removing alcohol for 6 months.
Did you do it? Are you going to keep on doing, or?
I have recalibrated my relationship with alcohol.
I have something to say about this. It's funny because I did you know that I quit drinking for 2 years?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I did it for 2 years. Well, when my daughter was going through her journey with, struggles and everything, I knew that I had to not only be completely sober and not have any, because I needed to be hyper alert to everything that was happening around me, but also to show her that, hey, you don't need this to be happy. I know that that's what other kids are doing, and that's what I've always done in my life. But here's like, let me set the example, to share. And that's just something, it's so interesting because my mind was so clear. I was a completely different person. It's a struggle in the beginning until you figure out what to order in a restaurant, One thing I found about myself was that I was not as social as I was before, drinking. And that was kind of like, I missed that. I missed the social aspect of drinking a lot. And I'll tell you, this is a slippery slope because I went back to it when I took my first trip to Paris in 2022 with my daughter Bella, and I was like, I'm gonna have some French wine. I'm sorry, this is it, but I'm just gonna have that. And then I was like, well, anytime I travel, then I can drink. I just started putting like some like little rules for me, but it sort of all goes down the window. I feel like I have a much better relationship with alcohol right now, knowing that I don't need that to, mm-hmm. you know, I don't need to have a glass of wine to watch a movie. And that's yeah. kind of like how I was before. I always had to have a little, yeah. it's like a relaxing thing at the end of the day, whatever. That just puts so much into our bodies that we're not, you know, aware of. It's just not, I mean, you're so much better without it. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say. Like your mind is more clear, you're more creative and this and this and that. So I do believe that that changes, but I kind of want to do it again.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's just a great reset and, you know, it's, we're definitely better off without yeah. it.
And I think I'll add this one caveat, like, you know, whatever it is that you're considering removing, it doesn't have to be a permanent thing.
Forever.
Don't think of it as a forever mm-hmm. thing. Just try it on for a first 3 months, for mm-hmm. a month, for 6 months, for a year. Try yeah. it on and see what you learn. See what it shows you. Because if you're identifying it as an obstacle, mm-hmm. removing it or changing your relationship with it will teach you something.
Yes.
And that's what you're really after.
Yes. Would you like to say a prayer?
I would.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Okay. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for how you bring people into our life, that whether it's for a moment or a season or a lifetime, that are just meaningful. Thank you for this full circle moment. And I just want to pray over everybody who's hearing this, that you show them what they need to see from spending this time with us today, Lord. You have a journey. You have gifts for them within this, Lord. And I just pray that they recognize what that is and that they take a step of boldness and explore that in whatever way you show to them that that exploration needs to be done. Lord, I pray for the year ahead. I pray for just us to receive all the amazing blessings and experiences and moments that you have for us. And I am just grateful for this time today. I want to lift up Jesus in your name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much for joining us today, friends. I hope you guys are walking away feeling encouraged and maybe even a little lighter. Make sure to subscribe and drop a comment or review so we can keep this faith-filled community growing. Share this episode if it touched you or if you know someone who needs to hear it. Let's spread the love. I'll see you next week on Karina Faith Diaries. And until then, stay strong, stay kind, and keep the faith.